91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Before My Time. I am your host, Gelsey Laurie, and we are joined, as always, with our co-host, producer, and lovely friend, Matt Kelly, to talk about the history of tiki bars. Let's take a sip. But the lime of a coconut, she called the doctor, woke him up and said, Doctor, is there nothing I could take? I said, Doctor.
We're here to entertain you. We'll sing your songs for good times, the best times. You can't go wrong. We'll two-step, a new step. It won't be long. When the Dixielands are playing, soon you'll be swaying. So come on, sing along.
You know, Gelsey, this episode's coming out on the 4th of July, and I was thinking, man, you know what would be really nice at the 4th of July? Having a nice tiki bar by a pool while you watch some fireworks. But I don't indulge in drinking. I don't know much of anything about tiki bars, but they always look cool. So why don't you? I believe you know quite a bit about tiki bars.
I do know. You know what? Fun fact, tiki bars are like my favorite thing in the whole world. Maybe
yeah,
not.
I don't know much about tiki bars. I know a lot about the tiki room. But
which kind of actually like does come in at the same time as like, that's a little after obviously the start of tiki bars, but there was this fascination with the islands, the exotic. It's funny, and we're going to go into it, but like that era of, what would you, Bali High, South Pacific, all this shit, they don't actually all correlate because it was also like combined with Asian culture, and it's almost like a worldwide explorer.
It's almost like they combined a bunch of things. Yeah, like they combined everything into like its own unique
1000%
aesthetic.
And that's there was definitely, and I feel like in the 50s, you know, like when Disneyland opened, that still was very relevant. And so it's like not a surprise that the tiki room would be its thing. But yes, I do love tiki bars. There's actually a few in Orange County that I have not yet been to that are on my list. I can't believe I haven't. But one of my favorite bars in Vegas, the Golden Tiki, I was a frequent there. I just love them. They're so fun. They're so catchy. They're so vintagey. If you go to ones today, you know, they're just real retro kitsch. And that describes me.
I don't know if I've ever told you this, but the Geekscape table at San Diego Comic-Con, which, side note, you won't see Gelsey, but you can meet me at San Diego Comic-Con, which is just a couple weeks away. But our table every year is set up across from this, like, pop art display. Mm-hmm. But I believe they literally call themselves the Tiki Lounge.
Oh,
and
cool.
It's, like, all the artwork is, like a 60s... I'll take pictures of it and send it to you this year.
I can... Honestly, imagine it. Like, you will send me it, and I'll go, that's exactly what I was picturing. I know exactly
like
what
it's like cartoonish 70s animation of, like, pop culture characters, but with, like, palm trees and, like, the tiki and, like, a totem pole or whatever.
I know,
like,
maybe I've seen it before. Maybe I've seen their stuff before because I literally, like, goes like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. But anyways, let's go into a little bit of the history of where tiki bars begin. So I was a little wrong. I was originally thinking, oh, it came out of World War II because we were in the South Pacific and people came back and brought that influence. Kind of true, kind of not. So our first tiki bar is, well, first of all, if you don't know what a tiki bar is, we kind of explained it, but it is a themed drinking establishment. They serve elaborate cocktails that are mainly rum-based. They're most famous for like their Mai Tais or their zombies. Most of them will have, there's like a dot dot dash drink that's really good. But most of them will have on their menus some kind of little indicator, either a literally dots under each drink, or sometimes they'll do little skulls, and they'll either have like 1 to 4 dots or skulls, and that indicates how strong the drink is. And so you'll get a zombie, we'll have like 4 dots, or, and they kind of are like, this is how fucked up you're gonna get. They're also really well known for like their big punch bowls. So every tiki bar, it's would be rare for you to find one that you can't get a big punch bowl that, you know, 2 or 4 of you can share. Sometimes they're on fire. They light the drinks on fire. It's all just a big spectacle. They were aesthetically defined by their tiki decor and were romanticized conception of, you know, tropical culture and Polynesian culture. And a lot of times now it'll be somewhat tied into like a nautical theme as well, or explorer theme. So it's, they do have this wide variety of what you can find, but that's generally what you're going to find. So we have our first one, Don the Beachcomber. Okay. It is one of the earliest and perhaps the first. They're pretty sure it's the first, but, you know, there's a little bit of a discrepancy, of course. And it was opened in Hollywood in 1933 by Ernest Gant. Ernest Gant later legally changed his name to Don Beach because he was just like, well, this is who I am now. But he would display artifacts that he collected on earlier trips through the tropics. So that was kind of like the start of this bar. He had traveled a lot and posted a lot of this stuff up and was like, oh, this is really cool. And he did go off to World War II, and the bar flourished under his ex-wife, Sunny Sund, and expanded it into a chain of 16 restaurants, which eventually become 25 restaurants. After World War II, he moved to Hawaii and opened Waikiki Beach, which was designed to evoke the South Pacific. You know, there were palm trees, tiki masks. There was a garden hose that showered rain on the roof to make it feel like there were rainstorms, which is a really typical thing now that a lot of tiki bars will do, is they'll kind of go dark and have random thunderstorms, almost like Rainforest Cafe, but in a very, like, there's a tiki bar at the Disneyland Hotel here in California called Trader Sam's, and they will have like a little rainstorm sesh every once in a while, and like the bartender will just get a squirt bottle and like squirt the crowd and be like, rainstorm, and like it's like really cheesy stuff like that. Like, that's a very typical tiki bar.
But I think that that's the stuff that people like. They like kitschiness.
And it's so tongue-in-cheek, and it's so fun. And like, the best is if you get a bartender that's just very like nonchalant and kind of dry about it, but like going through the motions, it sometimes makes it funnier.
It depends. It's the less, it's the same thing with like going on Jungle Cruise. Like, the less upbeat the skipper is, the better the overall experience.
Yeah,
it's
so true. There's kind of like a way to deliver it. And so sometimes they'll do that. And I love that. But
I have a quick Don Beach question before we move forward.
I don't know if I have the answer.
So he changed his name to Don Beach because of his career thing.
Don Beachcomber, yeah.
So if you were to change your last name to fit what you feel like your career, I mean, mine's easy. It would obviously be Maddie Podcast, but like, what would you change your name to?
Sounds like a neti pot. That like nose thing you put. Oh, that's a really good question. I might have to circle back to that.
It wouldn't be like Gelsey High Kick or like.
I mean, yeah, but I don't feel like that's like what I do. That's just something I do. It's not what I do. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's like Gelsey ha cha cha, like
Gelsey entertainer.
Razzle-dazzle. You know, I'm just the entertainer. Yeah, Gelsey the entertainer.
Gelsey razzle dazzle.
They'll be like, "Are you married to Cedric?" And I'm like, "No." All right, so yeah, so he goes to Hawaii, opens this thing. But this is a fun thing. In this establishment he had called Waikiki Beach, there was a bird inside that they trained to shout, "Give me a beer, stupid," which I love. And it was an actual bird, which kind of, again, so.
That's really fucking charming. I like that so much.
I know, isn't that great? It's so great. They do, my favorite tiki bar that I was talking about in Vegas, the Golden Tiki, they have 2 above the bar, like tiki room birds. Because a guy that worked on a lot of that bar does work for Disney, or did do a lot of creation and art for Disney. There's some kind of crossover. Literally, you walk in this bar and you're like, yes, this is Disney. But it's not.
Yeah.
But they have 2 tiki bird-esque things hanging above their bar, and they'll every once in a while come alive and have conversations, but they say just like really crude shit and really like funny and appropriate things, and but they're fake. So I love that this bird, they actually trained him to say that. So they do also open a Don the Beachcomber in the International Marketplace, which in Waikiki, the International Marketplace still does exist, but it's not what it used to be. They kind of tore down the old charm just little huts, and they put in a huge shopping mall. Cause duh. But it's a beautiful mall. Yeah, some people are mad. So anyways, that's kind of Don the Beachcomber's chilling. That's his thing. So then we also have Trader Vic's that pops up. Now, Trader Vic's is opened by Victor Bergeron? Oh my God. Bergeron. I wrote it again later. Victor Bergeron opens Trader Vic's in Oakland, California in 1936. So technically, obviously, Don the Beachcomber comes first because that's 33. Now, this is where it is claimed that the Mai Tai was created here in 1944. There is definitely a huge discrepancy on that. And Don the Beachcomber is like, no, I created the Mai Tai. So it's still actually not officially really traced on who did it. And there was a couple different versions of this, but Trader Vic's is kind of the, okay, that's where the Mai Tai is from. In Oakland, California, of all places. I always thought that the Mai Tai was from Hawaii. And I think a lot of people did. I thought there was like a little bar in Hawaii that was like, oh, this is where it comes from. No, Oakland. Just, you know, I think there's a lot of drugs up in Oakland. I think it's a really like methy kind of a place, if I'm not wrong.
I was going to say, I don't hear about, I mean, look, I don't want to judge any places or, you know, somebody might be listening from Oakland. But yes, I don't normally hear Oakland referred to as like, come to sunny Oakland, like where the streets are paved in gold.
Yeah, like, it's like where so you fly into to drive to Napa. That's what, yeah. Oakland, again, yeah, if you live in Oakland, no offense. I'm sure it's great, but so yeah, Mai Tais, which I love Mai Tais. And I do want to clarify that a lot of touristy places have Mai Tais and they're awful. They're just like a sugary rum drink. That is not a true Mai Tai. If you get a Mai Tai that's sugary, you have been failed by the cocktail gods. It should be very rum forward, a little bit of a bitch slap with a nice sugar to balance it out. So he did begin franchising outside of California. The first one was in Seattle, Washington, and it was the Outrigger in 1949. And in 1957, he lacked capital to expand, so he partnered with Conrad Hilton, and they licensed Trader Vic's brands to Hilton Hotels for $2 million. Hilton retained to oversee decoration, staffing, and operations. And he was on an annual salary of $65,000, which seems really low, but fine. And unfortunately, the original Oakland location is gone. But so Hilton bought them out, and now there's tons of Trader Vic's hotels. Trader Vic's restaurants. Both Trader Vic's and Don the Beachcomber's did kind of a very similar thing where they expanded into restaurants, and they both opened, and this is very typical for a lot of tiki bars, is to serve Chinese food. And so they had a whole Chinese restaurant attached because at that point, to the Americans' mind, Asia and China was very exotic. And so they were just putting these exotic things together in that sense. So yeah, it's kind of, you know, and then they also started the poo-poo platter, which is big in from Hawaii as well, and that's kind of just like an appetizer platter. And so you can, again, go to a lot of tiki bars and get poo-poos. They're very delicious. Normally have kind of a fusion of Asian island food. So a lot of times you can get egg rolls and then get, you know, chicken kebab skewers or whatever. Now, an interesting thing about the cocktails, though, is that before this time, there were no really fancy, like, now we know mixologists, like, cocktail bars are all about, you know, how crazy and zany can we get our cocktail and this, that. And it was Don Beach who started really experimenting with cocktails and putting in spices and being like, what would happen if I put, you know, some nutmeg in this and this? And that had never been done before, which is now a standard for cocktails. So tiki bars not only changed, you know, a lot of things in the sense of kind of bringing a fantasized, romanticized environment that's fun and kitschy and, you know, you can't travel the world, but here's the world brought to you kind of a vibe. But they also really changed the cocktail game as we know it today. And that was a huge kind of, you know, and that's a big deal. So no one really did in these exotic drinks that he created. And he went from kind of a standard. There was a, I thought I had it written down somewhere.
I guess when you think, I mean, again, this is coming from someone who doesn't drink, but like when I think of people going out to drink, very rarely, you know, I would say for every person who just orders a beer, like more often than not, they do want some type of cool combination of flavor, like a cocktail or whatever. So that's, I mean, that's not, to me as a non-drinker, that seems very huge. Like probably one of the biggest advancements for alcohol consumption in general is the creation of the cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
So much so that they do mocktails now for sober people who still want to get that fun flavor of drinking.
Like, exactly. Tiki bars did kind of die out, I would say, in the 60s. They were relevant, and around in the 50s, but they did kind of die out because people were like, this is cheesy, this is shitty. And drinks went back more to, they're like, oh, we don't want the sugary, intense, beachy drinks, even though that's not really how they are. And more classic, you know, French 75s and Manhattans became the high class prominent drinking in the 70s and 80s. And then it wasn't until, I don't even think the 90s, it was more recently that now there's this resurge of tiki culture and tiki bars, and now it's kind of back in mixology. It revived a lot of these cocktails as well, that people are like, yeah, oh, these are really intense, in-depth cocktails, and if we do them right and add our own twist, we can make some really cool shit. And there's obviously a big vintage movement that kind of more so has always been around, but started in the 90s, the rockabilly movement, the underground swing movement, which...
I was going to say that I think the tiki thing specifically in the 90s was still... My theory is that it was used as the punchline still. Like, they would have, like, an uncool character hanging out at a tiki bar, and that would be kind of, like, a way for the audience to quickly be like, oh, they're out of touch, or they're out of touch,
yeah,
they're uncool.
Yeah, and it's kind of cheesy. But then, it's, like, tacky. Tacky's the word.
Yeah, but I was going to say, but people our age who were, like, you know, maybe 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 when those shows are airing are probably just like, well, that place looks cool. Like, and I think that's kind of what pushed it forward.
Maybe.
To a certain
and then
extent.
I do think the vintage aesthetic and that classic 1930s and 40s, which again, in the 90s, there was a huge resurgence. I mean, even we get like Stray Cats into Brian Setzer Orchestra, Squirrel Nut Zippers.
Yeah.
I mean,
you have those khaki swing commercials kicking out.
Exactly.
In the late
90s. It was huge. Like, it really, there was this underground, there's a whole, we should do an episode on it, but maybe not, underground swing movement in the 90s that revived swing dancing, and it revived greasers and pinups and rockabilly. Yeah. And now you kind of have the modern pinup girl with all the tattoos. And that also came with a revival of tiki culture. And
yeah.
It's
everything
fun,
just
and
keeps
I'm...
repeating itself. I mean, that's...
Exactly,
like,
exactly.
Like, there's only like 40 decades of actual fashion, and then we just keep recycling through it over and over and over. Like 4 decades. I mean, I said 40 decades like a psychopath. But 4 decades of like hip stuff. It's like you have like a 50s aesthetic up to like a mid-90s aesthetic, and then it's just like... cyclical. And even then, like, parts of the 80s and 90s culture is already pulling back 50s and 60s stuff, and just we're in a fashion and culture time loop.
We really are
That's why this podcast will always be relevant, because any of the stuff that we're talking about will always come back in some
way,
shape, or form.
Exactly. No, I do want to say that there is, and I'm not going to go too deep in this because we all know that this is not a political show, but there is kind of a backlash, especially in today's climate, of tiki bars being that they should be shut down and that they're politically incorrect. And a lot of them are going through a little bit of a sweep through of like, okay, get rid of the idols, the tiki masks, is that because, you know, it's offensive to the cultures that they're originally from. And we are taking something. Tiki was actually in a culture, it's a Polynesian. The tiki is, I forget if he's like a god or, you know, and now we've now referenced, this is all tiki, but it's not, you know, and it's kind of, we're taking these idols and saying they were something they're not and twisting cultures and mashing them up with others that, you know, it's like China and the South Pacific have nothing to do with each other. And we're like, they go together. Yeah. But I will say this, I think I don't see it that way. I see it as, again, like an adventure or explorer bar where it'd be like if I went around the world and I traveled to all these, you know, especially at that time, quote unquote, exotic places that are not America, and I come back and I'm bringing all my collection of things, that's when they go together. And that's why I think it is
almost,
okay. And that's how
I feel
see
like
it.
It's the name that's the problem. Like if you were calling it a tiki bar, like if somehow that name got changed to like an adventurer's club or whatever, it'd be like, oh, obviously.
Yeah.
It's like, but I get what you're saying exactly. I mean,
that's why people have a problem with it. But I'm just so like, nostalgic that I'm like, you can't change the name. And they're not called tiki bars. I mean, they are, but there's, you know, the names are all different. You have Don the Beachcomber and you have a Trader Vic's. And, you know, it's like, okay.
It's its own thing.
I just love them so much.
I think it was a great episode. I think people are going to love it. And they're going to maybe like the announcement that we're going to have right after this commercial break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
We're making an ad.
Napping ad.
This is where I think if we're doing it right, Alec Baldwin comes in. He says a couple things. Mm-hmm. He listens to the podcast every week. Yep. Has he been canceled? Was Alec Baldwin the one who killed somebody? I hear that Gary Sinise is free.
Oh, okay, great.
He hasn't worked since 2020.
So, what would be the script that we would have Gary Sinise say for the Napping Through Happy Hour podcast?
Listen to this damn show. Damn it.
The Napping Through Happy Hour podcast brought to you by Geekscape.
Real life, real drama, real time.
I'm Gary Sinise.
That's the
ad.
That's the ad. That's the ad.
And we're back. Gelsey, the listeners may have noticed something on their feed recently, which is that there's been weeks in between episodes.
Yeah, one to every now. Other. I know.
Yeah, we're moving. Really, so that's kind of the announcement. We're, due to the craziness and the chaos of me having 15 different podcasts and Gelsey having 15 different jobs, we found that the...
Gotta survive climate.
Yeah, we didn't want to not... do before my time, but we also just, the bandwidth was not there for us to do it weekly. So guess what? You still get us twice, sometimes maybe even three times a month, but
and
not
let me
every
tell
week.
You, I just appreciate all of you sticking in with us and listening. It really makes my heart happy. I do this for your entertainment and just to get something off my chest. I don't know. I'm like, I know useless information and I need to tell somebody because some of my friends are sick of hearing it from me. I'm not going to lie. So
guys,
I really
you
want to
hear everything I've ever learned about tiki bars? And they're like, no, Gelsey, we're trying
no,
to go
literally,
out to the club.
I went on a vacation, a weekend trip with my friend Allie to Hawaii, and I like was outside reading, and she was taking a cat nap, and like I walked in, and she just woke up, and I was like, oh my god, so did you know in 1953, she's like, I can't take a history lesson right now. She's like, give me 20 minutes. I was like, okay.
See, this is why our friendship works, because I'm that person who, as soon as I learn
I had
fact,
to tell
like,
somebody.
How many people can I tell?
I had to tell somebody about Coca-Cola, which we did do an episode on Coca-Cola. That's why I had to tell all of you. Like, I have to get it out. Oh, yeah. But if there's something you want me to learn about and tell you, let us know on Instagram. You can find us at @beforemytime_podcast or on Facebook. Just type in Before My Time. We will pop up. Send us a message, DM, comment right on our wall. Is that what it's called? Yeah, wall. Silk wall. I didn't know if that was a MySpace thing. My brain went way back. Let us know. And also, if you do enjoy this, and you have a second, it would mean a lot to us if you gave us a 5-star review. I almost just died and choked on my own spit. That's why that sounded weird. I like to live my life on the edge on this podcast. So thanks for tuning in, guys. This is a sloppy ending. Just like a tiki bar night. Oh, yeah. See what I did there? Bye.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.